Hey guys, this episode's going to be a little bit different than the ones that we typically record. We had a guest on this time, which we don't typically do, and it left the recording a little bit disjointed. So we apologize in advance for any sort of confusion from that perspective, but very glad to have him on.
Absolutely, what Chris said.
Okay, enjoy the show.
I found out something very unsettling about Harry. Gambles.
What do you mean he gambles?
He plays craps in the back room of a private club. I mean, you know, you're 11. Come on, little Joe. Snake eyes. Hard way.
That's how it goes. He loses a lot of money. You had no idea?
No, I didn't.
Welcome to the Crap Vegas Podcast.
Vegas, here we come.
Vegas.
Here are your hosts, Chris and Josh.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 31 of the Crap Vegas Podcast. I am Chris, he is Josh, and there's a third person on a window in front of me, and I can't
figure out what's going on, Josh. We have someone sitting between us virtually, yes. It's weird.
Yeah, it is
going to change the whole show.
It's now a three-person show. We have Jack Mulaney joining us in studio today to kind of yell at us, complain about something that we said. I'm not 100% sure, but you know what? He sounded upset, and I figured, well, let's give him a studio to come on and talk to us.
But Jack's request for us to start with was to talk about our medical maladies.
He did.
So what before, have you got, Chris?
Before we get into any sort of contact information, Josh, let me tell you about the trip that I took today. I mean, I went over to that podiatrist, and he started like cutting away on things. It was just terrible. I'm getting old. My knees are hurting. Oh, my gosh. The world's falling apart.
Speaking of, did you ever hear the Norm Macdonald joke about the moth that goes to see the podiatrist? Have I ever told you this?
No. Oh, Lord.
Moth flies into a podiatrist's office, and the podiatrist says, "How can I help you?" And the moth says, "Oh, doctor, I have to tell you, I'm just having a really hard time. My wife left me. The kids are on drugs. One of the kids dropped out of school." And the podiatrist said, "Well, I would love to help you, but shouldn't you see a psychiatrist? You know, why did you come see me?" And the moth said, "Well, your light was on."
Okay. Well, yep. Well, episode 31 is here. This is great.
See guys. What you get, Jack?
Yeah, this is what he gets for coming early. Let's talk about how people can get in touch with us. If you want to do so, you can do so via email. That's podcast@crapvegas.com. You can reach us on our new Facebook page, which I'm really excited about. It has like 250 members now. People are joining. People are talking. And more importantly, Josh, people are answering other people's questions so that I don't have to. So I'm really
or
excited
me.
About that.
Right.
Or you. Well, I mean, yeah.
I'm usually more active on Facebook than you are.
Yeah, that is true. If you want to get on there, that's crapvegas.com/Facebook. You can reach us on our new voicemail setup that we have going on. People have been responding well to that. That's crapvegas.com/voicemail. Or as always, the easiest way is on Twitter. He is at Vegas Duffy. I'm at Small Whale 13, or the show page is at Crap Vegas. Okay, so you know how to get in touch with us. Let's talk about previous episode feedback. We got an email from Tiki Mau Mau. That is what it said, Josh. It said Tiki Mau Mau.
I'm keeping a straight face.
Talking about the MGM Rewards credit card that we mentioned a couple episodes about. Is there value in taking it? I know some people have given us some feedback on that. He said, hey, there's two good reasons to have it since it has no annual fee. One, keeping the card active with at least a small purchase every 6 months or so keeps your points from expiring. Great for those who only go to Vegas 1 to 2 times a year. Thoughts?
Well, I actually agree in the sense of I have an MGM Rewards MasterCard. So that's absolutely right. It keeps, I mean, you know, I'm there enough that I don't worry about keeping my points alive, but you know, or keeping them from expiring, but it's good that's a value for sure. And I know there aren't people that go to Vegas as often as we do. And if that's one thing that points to you having that card, I think that's great.
The only thing that I would say about that, I did my little bit of research that I ever do on any show. And
look at
I
you.
Did find out that points on the MGM Rewards program do not expire if you're Pearl level or higher. Anyways, whether if you have the card or not. So as long as you've got past their base level, their entry level tier, your points aren't expiring. You just got to carry that status from year to year and then they don't expire. Now, if you lose your status below Pearl, so if you're Pearl or higher and then the next year you don't qualify, then the clock is triggered and they're dropping off. But as long as you keep Pearl status or higher, those points are never expiring.
And do you think that's because, I mean, you wouldn't know the answer necessarily, but is that probably because you couldn't get to Pearl unless you played or had the credit card?
No,
I mean, does that make sense?
Think about it from this perspective, Josh. You could earn Pearl status in January of a year, and not go back until December or January of next year, it won't drop off. So as long as you've earned that status, you get to keep it. Now, I mean, I'm no expert on that. I read it right off their website, so I don't know the terms and conditions associated with that, but it did state very clearly,
there you go,
pro or higher, you get to keep your points. So that is something to keep in mind.
It's worth something, yeah.
And the second thing he said is that it has no transaction fees, foreign transaction fees, that is. So it's a good card to have if you travel outside the U.S. My thought with all of these cards, these store cards, these casino cards, there are 1,000 better credit cards out there that will offer no transaction fees and actually give you a decent return on your money. You know, something that's giving you a 1.5, 2, 3 cents a dollar being spent. And MGM, that card does not really do that. So I wouldn't get this card just for that. But if you are somebody that wants to have it because you want the free parking and you want to make sure your points don't expire and you're not going to play that much, then sure, it's a great card. I just wouldn't encourage that from a credit card perspective overall.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I have it, as I said, but it's not, you know, there are, as you said, there are much better credit cards to have for travel and points and all that kind of stuff if that's something you're into more.
Okay, so thank you for that email. Appreciate it. We received a message on the Crap Vegas Facebook group, that's crapvegas.com/Facebook, that said, listening to the latest episode, had to stop the podcast and chime in about the y'all and Coke conversation. No one from Texas says all y'all because it's already plural. And yes, Coke encompasses all soft drinks, but if you want Dr. Pepper, you just say, can I get a Dr. Pepper? Carry on. Josh, I think this is what I tried to tell you. You couldn't listen. Don't be arguing with us. All sodas are Cokes. But yes, nobody says, can I get a Coke? I want a Dr. Pepper.
Okay. I totally, next time I'm down in your neck of the woods, I'm gonna look over at the server. I'm going to say, oh, y'all, can I get a Coke? And when I say Coke, I mean Dr. Pepper.
And then a couple other people, Josh, emailed in.
You're just ignoring me.
I'm just skipping right past that. A couple other people emailed in, Josh, talking about our discussion of table limits and players on those tables. Should they lower the limits, raise them, you know, that whole discussion. And people were saying, regarding the value to a casino of a higher limit player or table, higher limit players might be much less likely to want to play at a $10 table for a variety of reasons. A property might actually risk losing that business entirely by having table limits too low. And that is true in many ways. There are plenty of times that Josh and I don't want to play at a $10 table for numerous reasons. You know, whether it's crowding at the table, the low level action that slows the game down when they're putting, you know, a dollar on prop action and stuff like that. We may want to avoid that table because of that limit. So having it at $25 or even $50 may be something that we seek out.
That's absolutely right. And I think a lot of higher limit players think that way. They don't want to play at a $10 table, even though they can play that same if you're a $50, you know, if you're used to playing at a $50 table and that's where you want to play. It's not that you can't play that at a $10 table. You have reasons for not wanting to. You might have reasons for not wanting to, for sure. You might want a little more exclusivity, you know, fewer people at the table. You might want, you know, dealers that are more experienced. You might want less bets flying in and out for, you know, for lower limit players. You know, there are a lot of reasons that they might be a little more picky about which table they play at.
Okay, so we've made Jack wait way too long. Let's jump ahead a little bit, Josh.
What do you think so far, Jack?
Jack, welcome to the show.
I'm glad that you snuck the Norm Macdonald bit in there so that I don't have to be the most cringeworthy part of this recording.
Congratulations.
Way to talk about Norm that way. Jeez.
I mean, Jack, at Turbulence2 on Twitter, if I remember correctly, Jack is a World Series of Poker top 15 finisher. I mean, what else could we possibly have on this show that would top that?
Even better, you could have a guy that likes to explain why playing craps the boring way is better. You could find a guy like that and someone who wants to be adversarial about it. You know,
it sounds like that's the case. So full disclosure for those that are a little bit behind on the episodes or whatever it may be, on the last podcast episode, main podcast episode, Josh and I had a discussion about a topic that's popped up hundreds of times. We get it over and over again. That's playing the pass line versus not playing the pass line for many different reasons. We had a nice discussion about it. We gave our feedback on it where for some circumstances, we think it's better to stay off the pass line versus getting on it. And I must say, before Jack even begins to chime in with the millions of things that I'm sure he's written down on why that's a bad idea, I thought we made it clear that it's not the best mathematical choice. I want to start off by saying that if you're looking to play the best way to avoid house edge, then playing on the pass line is the answer for you in all situations, whether you're playing full odds, not playing full odds, playing no odds. It's just a good bet. But that being said, there are other factors involved, I think, in my eyes. And we gave some reasons why I think that that wouldn't be the best. Yes, John.
Now, I have one more thing before Jack jumps in and jumps all over us, takes umbrage with us. I just wanted to say umbrage. There is what the first, Chris is absolutely right. As far as the best bet on the craps table, as far as house edge goes, it is the pass line. With no odds, you have a house edge of 1.41%. You can take that down all the way to 0.01%, I think, with 20 times odds.
Now, see, so, I take exception with that too, but we'll bring that up in a minute.
Okay.
I keep going.
But as far as just the pass line, there is a better bet than the pass line bet.
The don't pass line?
Well, there's that, but I wasn't even going there. Okay. That doesn't even count. Speaking of, although I'm thinking of a table that doesn't even have a don't pass line. There's a better bet.
I
buying
know exactly what
the
you're 2 and 12
on a crapless table has a house edge of 0.73%. So take that, Jack.
So in solution or in summary, before we even let Jack on, we're going to say that you should play the don't pass. And if you're not going to do that, you need to go to a crapless table and buy the 2 and 12. And that's it. Those are your options.
And that's it. Right.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay, Jack, what you got?
Fire away.
Well, so first of all, I want to say that I came here with the intention of being really adversarial, and you guys are being too friendly at this point. I was going to say first they shilled for win, then they shilled for Aria, and now they're stuck shilling for the pass for the place bets. I mean,
show me the money. It's kind of show me the money.
It's kind of a third rate industry there, but if it, if the check's cash, then you might as well go for it.
That's no, right. Listen to Patreon. We're shilling for El Cortez.
So you say you thought you made it clear that it wasn't necessarily the most mathematically smart way to play. And I think you did hint at that a lot. But okay. Then I think the problem that I had is a lot of language crept in like, you know, if you're not taking more than one times odds, then mathematically you're starting to put yourself at a disadvantage, or say things like, well, I know it's not the best bet, but it's practical and smart. And I think that a lot of the times when you're talking about which bets are the ones that seem to make the most sense, you're really just talking about the bets that are a good compromise between balancing having fun with having a limited bankroll. And at no point did you talk about having fun in any point in this discussion, which I think was kind of strange, because the main reason that you would deviate from the lowest house edge bets all the way down to not playing at all is because you're trying to have fun. And I don't think you did a great job of explaining why there was a trade-off between taking some higher house edge bets on and then thus having more fun by taking those bets. Instead, you're just kind of like, well, you know, one times odds, that really doesn't make a lot of sense.
That's
two times odds
fun,
or more.
Right.
Two times odds or more. Now that could make some sense. That could be practical. And it's like there's no such thing of making sense or being practical at the craps table, right? As we know, the best house edge is not playing, and then more practical than that could be some other bets.
Well,
go ahead, Chris.
Let's go ahead and mute Jack and never let him talk again. That was way too adversarial. No, I think he brings up some really good points. The only thing I would say, Jack, is that it's not necessarily that I don't think the pass line is fun. Because I actually don't really think about it from the perspective of, is that bet fun versus not fun or anything like that when you're talking about the pass line. I would make that distinction if you're talking about something like the all-tall small with a 20% house edge. That is an absolutely terrible bet, but I play it because it's fun.
But it's fun, right.
That is very clear. When it comes to the pass line, though, especially when we're talking situations like single odds on a 4 or 10, what I'm really trying to say, and you are right, I probably didn't do a good job of clarifying this. What I'm really trying to say is, if you're comparing something like single odds on a 4, what the house edge is on that, compared to, say, buying the 4, we're talking about minuscule differences in house edge. But that can be made up for by how much you're getting back from the casino and comps for being rated on that amount. The payout is significantly better, obviously, when you're doing a buy bet versus, you know, having it on the line with limited odds. And yes, I mean, the pass line bet being two bets is important. But the reason I almost wanted to cut off Josh earlier, we have a tendency to put these two things together where we say pass line plus odds means that you can get that bet down to a 0.1%, or if you put 100 times odds. And all that is bullshit at the end of the day. Mathematically, that is true if you're combining multiple bets, but we could say that about a lot of things. If you place the 6 and you do it all tall small, then
that's
your
a good
overall
point,
bet
right.
is at, you know, you
you're lowering the edge of the all tall small, right?
But
so
playing,
yeah, all, I'll push back on the thing you said about the difference between a four with single odds and buying the four, the difference being minuscule. And that's, as a video poker player, you come to look at not house edge, but you often look at return to player, which is just 100% minus the house edge. And so you might know that some of the best video poker machines will have like a 99.5% return. Mm-hmm. And then a lesser machine that pays 8.6 instead of 9.6 might have a 98.5% return. And a lot of people might call that a minuscule difference in the house edge. But the way I look at it is it's a three times more house take, right? You're paying 1.5% instead of 0.5%. And as a result, you're playing the house three times more to sit and play their game than you would if you had looked for a better machine, especially if there was one at that casino, right? And so the thing you just got at in what you last said, which I think is very important to understand, is that, yeah, the amount that you're paying the casino to play their game is just all your bets combined times the amount of the bet times the house edge on that particular bet, right? And so when you say it's kind of the thing you said there about it being a minuscule difference between a four with single odds and buying the four is like 1.6, and correct, a four with single odds, if you're talking about the exact same amount of money, the house edge on that aggregate amount of money is going to be closer to 0.7, right? So it's less than half you're paying to get that same action.
Yes, and I guess I don't look at it from that perspective because of odds and how I think of odds. Odds do not affect how a player is going to do for the session at all. There's no house edge on them. It doesn't make you more money. It doesn't lose you more money.
Right. They're only good if you take them in lieu of you placing other bets, right?
Sure. Yeah,
exactly. That's the only way that you claw that advantage back. You're taking this one bet with no house edge where you might have otherwise been tempted to put your bankroll on some other bets that do have a house edge. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. So I look at it, at least from my perspective, I say, okay, yeah, I buy bets 1.6%, pass line, not factoring in the odds, trying to offset it down, is 1.41%. We're talking about a fifth of a percentage point change, which, yes, in video poker would be massive. But my overall response to that would be, you're not playing craps because of house edge. It's one of the worst games, other than a couple bets that you can make. And most people don't play that way, though.
Well, hang on. I would push back a little bit on that, too.
Come on, Josh. Come join us, Josh.
Part of the reason I think I first started playing crap was I read somewhere that, you know, next to blackjack, it was the game that you could get the house edge down, you know, as low as, you know, the second only to blackjack. I think that may have been what first drew me to craps. It didn't keep me at craps. But I think that there are a lot of people that hear that and think that that's true. So I think some people are playing for house edge, or at least believe that they are. Now, yeah, I mean, I play the all tall small, I play the hard eight, I do all these things that take the house edge way above what Chris has got his finger up.
No, I understand that. It is a good game and there are some bets that you can make that are good quality bets. But if we're talking about like a pass line being the best bet you can make at 1.41%, you know, of course, don't pass is better and the buy bets on the crapless table are better. But the average blackjack game that the person seeks out in Vegas, if you can find it, like a TI, if you're playing a 3-2 blackjack game with normal rules, you're at about a half a percentage point advantage. It's about 0.5. Right. The average craps bets are closer to 1.5. I mean, you're talking about a three times better game. If people really cared about house edge, they would play blackjack almost exclusively. They might bounce out and play a little baccarat, but you wouldn't go to craps if that's truly what mattered. Now, if you are going to play,
that's really funny because I see it the opposite way. As someone who mostly plays come bets when I go to the table and mostly plays with single or double odds, like when if I play at the Bellagio or the Cosmo, you know, I play a bit different if I show up and play with the crap Vegas guys. So they've seen me play a lot of place bets.
True.
Because
he places the jack number, 6 and 8. Yeah,
he does. Exactly. 6 and 8. Yeah.
And so, but I usually play 25 on the line, two $25 come bets, and then $50 odds on each, just double odds. And so it seems strange to say that it's mostly bad bets when I'm putting $75 out there with a 1.4 and then the rest, $150 out there with a 0.0. You know, I agree with Josh. I think a lot more people than you might suspect, at least among the gambling enthusiast community, you know, not the walk up to a table with $20 community. Sure. I think there are literally dozens of us that play the game, you know, kind of for some of the math.
And I've thought about it, Chris, to go back to kind of spin this to blackjack, and you were saying a three times house edge difference. I was thinking about, okay, but the difference between a blackjack being that, was it 0.02%, 0.5? Okay. The difference between that is I have to know basic strategy. I have to come in and know something to get that right. At craps, I can put my $25 down on the pass line and get that 0.1%, 0.4% and not have to do any thinking at all.
No, I mean, that's true.
So, I mean, I think that, I mean, yes, if you want that, the true best house edge, black deck is the way to go. But I mean, for me, craps is more, it's a lot more fun than blackjack, which is, I mean, why we play it, but it still does preserve that low house edge if you want it to.
I get you. I mean, I can understand that completely. And what percentage of players, Josh, would you say are pass line come bet players? That's all they touch. They won't touch anything else that gets crazy. No prop action, no features, no buying or placing numbers. They just stick to the things that are the best options.
What do you think, Jack? 30, 40%?
No, it's less than that. Way less than that.
I think it's a lot of people, though. You see a lot of 3-point Molly. No, I think it's bigger than that.
No,
I think you see a lot of 3-point Molly players, but maybe they're sneaking into the features. Yeah.
And I think it depends on, I think the higher level action, you tend to see it filter out a bit more for some come bets, like your story with the guy with the $200,000 marker at the win. He was just doing a continuous come, right?
Right.
And you're going to see that more among like really high rollers. But I think in general, it's not a lot of people that play the come. And I do kind of have an anecdote to share about that from my time in Biloxi. Ooh, it's story time. You can come sit on Grandpa's knee, not his bad knee, but come sit on the good knee. And
not the prosthetic replacement. Yeah.
And I think the reason I'm so militantly defensive of the come bet as not only the best strategy house edgewise, but as a fun strategy, is because come bettors tend to get a lot of flack, not from other players, but from dealers. You kind of get the same come bet shaming that people might get for side bets. You know, why aren't you playing that? Look at that. You got 6, 7, 8. That would have played this much, you know? And this has happened to me. This happened to me most recently in Biloxi, but I've seen it at Aria. I've seen it at Resorts World. And they asked, hey, who taught you that? Like, why are you doing that? Who taught you how to play this way? And I was like, well, I didn't have to be taught to play. Like, the first thing I learned at the craps table was the pass line.
You and said, I know the house edge.
Well, exactly.
This is fun for me.
Knowing the house edge is what makes gambling fun. That's true. Actually believe that, but
you should know it. As I said, know the odds, but play the way that brings you joy.
But so I ended up saying like, well, and once I knew the pass line, someone just explained to me that the come was just the pass line, but over again. I was like, oh, cool. I don't have to know anything else to know this.
Right.
And then she was like, but you could be getting paid so much more if this was just a place bet or a buy bet. And then at that point, that's when you realize that they've kind of lost the plot, because it's like, well, yeah, you'd get paid more, but it would also pay more if it was a hard six, you know?
But Jack, like, you have to roll the number twice.
Right. So that's the other thing they start to say.
Yes, and you hear that. Yeah.
I realized that it's almost like when if someone's playing the don't and someone says, why would you like lay odds when you're already getting 1-to-1 on the main bet? And these odds just pay worse. Like, you might as well just put more on the don't pass or the DC. And once you realize that someone's making that argument, it's very hard to try to talk to them about it. So once a dealer starts going down that road, that's kind of where I just kind of shut it down. Oh, no, this is the way I like to play, or, you know, I like playing this way, or I like the comeback. You know, I'm not there to argue with them the way I am here to argue with you. But I think there is this theory that a lot of people have that there exists a threshold at which it's better to make a place bet or a buy bet than it is to play pass come or to play pass line and come. So they think place buy is better than pass come at a certain threshold of odds. And if you're below that threshold, you would do one. And if you're above that threshold, you do the other. And to me, I think there is a threshold in terms of how much fun you have playing the game. I don't think I would enjoy playing pass and come with no odds. But there's no mathematical reason that you would ever switch from one to the other. Based on how much odds you're willing to take, right?
I think that's
the thing that dealers end up kind of trying to drive home. There was that call into You Can Bet on That, where someone went to put single odds behind, and the dealer was like, hey, that's a bad bet.
Right, right.
And it's like, well, what would that even mean? Well, what it means is the dealer's salty that you didn't just place the number instead, because they know the payouts, and they know you'd get paid more, right?
So the dealer was on Chris's team there.
Right,
if you're going to play with Team Chris. Is that going to be the thing after this episode? It's going to be Team Chris.
It's Team Chris, Jack. Right.
Yeah. And so that's just kind of my anecdote, is that you get dealers and you hear about it where if they see you not making as much money as you could have when the numbers do hit, they kind of forget the fact that the comeback is much better when the numbers don't hit, right?
You do see that for sure. I remember a story, Jack, as you're talking. When I was a three-point Molly player, I was at Bally's, I think, now Horseshoe, and playing. And I played for like 5 hours doing a three-point Molly at pretty good limits. And I would see people in and play, come in and do 270 across and get slaughtered. And I was thinking, I was still a kind of a newer craps player. And I'm like, how did I do okay over 5 hours as a three-point Molly player and these place bettors got killed? Like what made it? And it just so happened that, the way the dice rolled. And as you said, you're doing, but to me it's, and Chris and I have talked about this a lot, it's about trying to find the right balance. I think I have a pretty good sense of, the house edges on various bets, and I try and balance that with the fun part. And, I like to have a lot of numbers in play, and I try not to get myself too heavy on one, which is what happens if I have 5 times odds on a 6 and that kind of thing. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, let's talk about players and where rating matters. Because in an ideal world, rating means nothing. And I agree, if rating really did mean nothing, I probably would put more on the pass line and have more comebacks.
But I'd probably be a three-point Molly player.
But so I'm so glad you're bringing this up, because I have a thing in my notes. This is like my, kind of like death list where I'm crossing off names here. But I have a thing in my notes that says, the story's been told multiple times where Mr. Duffy got told by a host at the Bellagio, hey, why are you playing like that? If you played this way instead with the same amount of money in action, you would get a much better rating.
Right.
That sets off like huge alarm bells in my head.
Oh,
that's like
me too, Jack. Like, doesn't mean I did anything.
There's a reason that there's a reason they're asking you to do this, and a reason that you're getting the better rating. Right.
You are not wrong. Yes.
I do think in general, if you are comps oriented or rating oriented or even tier status oriented, there probably are ways that you can get stuff back. If you're really willing to try to, like you guys like to say, goose your rating in a certain way. But I think in general, what do you get? You get comp like 30% of your Theo in general. 30% of your average Theo you can get back in comps. Yep. So if you're giving up X percent more times the house edge than only getting 0.3 times X back, it's almost always going to be better, unless you're a comp savant, to be able to just pay for stuff yourself. Take the casino rate on the rooms and then play the way that you like. And granted, that's why it goes back to what's fun and what's not fun. If you're looking for a reason to start spreading across and the host says, hey, you know this drug you've been thinking about trying? Well, you also get a better rating.
It's a win-win.
Right. And so, I don't know. I think it mostly comes down to the fact that it's a win-win, because you've realized you enjoy playing across more than you do playing come bets on 3 to 4 numbers, right? And then the extra rating on top of that is just gravy.
Oh, sure. It's absolutely a bonus, because I think about it from the perspective, let's say you're a three-point Molly player, so you're getting 3 quarter bets out there with full odds. Say it's 125 behind. So at any time, you got 450 in play, 375 in odds and 75 on the line. You're getting rated on 75 of it by most hosts. Or most tables. I mean, depends on where it is. Some places will give you partial credit for odds. Some give you no credit. You can ask, and usually they're fairly straightforward with that information if they know what you're even talking about. Some just type it into a computer and have no clue what you're saying.
Right.
But in that situation, you're talking about the difference between, say, a $75 player in some people's eyes and a $450 player in some people's eyes. That is the difference between being, hosted and welcomed at a property very, lavishly, versus not even being talked to.
There is a good reason for that.
Well, for sure. Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. But so, depending on what's important to you, a person that's a 450 average at a lot of properties will be able to get a suite, all their food taken care of, spa services, transportation. And the person betting 75 will probably might not even get a room at places like that. So you have to assign a value.
That is important that you're not saying here is that both of these players, the one who only has 75 in rated action and the one that's playing, 450 across or some semblance thereof, both stand to lose large amounts in a given session, right? And that's why we kind of view these two betting strategies as similar. And you're saying, hey, given that you could suffer these catastrophic losses, it would feel like a bummer in that case to only have been playing $75 rated, right?
And for sure.
In the long run, the expected value doesn't work out that way. But you guys also like to talk a lot about the variance of these bets. And it is true that over a given session or even a given weekend, it's the variance, the way the dice land dictates the way your weekend goes more than your betting strategy does. And you guys bring that up all the time.
Oh, yeah. And so, it doesn't matter how you play at the end of the day.
Well, see, and that's the thing that I think makes it really easy to kind of poo-poo someone who's only getting, he's not getting much from the casino because he's only putting, you know, three quarter bets in action that the casino actually has any vested interest in. And it's easy to look at them and say, hey, that guy doesn't know what he's doing because he can lose just as much as me and he's not getting shit from the casino. But it really, the math really is king here. You'd be better off paying for your own room and buying your own dinner and just pocketing the extra money, pocketing that extra 70% that you're not giving the casino by putting that money out in the place bet section or the buy bet section that you have in odds.
Without running the math in the background to say, okay, suite's worth X, food is worth X, and trying to figure out in an average session what it looks like. I haven't done that, nor do I have any desire to. Mark Duvall, if you want to do that, go crazy. That's right up your wheelhouse. But
right, like you're saying, soft comps do change the thing a bit because you're only getting 30% back, but the house's true cost of a room is different than your true cost of a room, and you can get into little arbitrage to be done there. But I think in general, it feels an awful lot like you're suggesting that people chase comps the same way the host suggested to Josh that he chase comps.
I
hope we're not suggesting that. I think it is a consideration.
Go ahead, Josh. What? I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, I think it is something that people should be aware of. And if that's important, if that's fun for you, I mean, quite honestly, I like being, treated the way the properties treat me. And that's I do think sometimes, especially when I'm, in the middle of a losing streak and this year hasn't been particularly good, I think, well, should I just have a trip? In fact, I'm going to have a trip where I'm going to low roll a lot more and I'm going to stay at a property where I'm going to get comp, but I'm going to be paying resort fees but I don't have any pressure to play. I've thought about that. Like, why don't I just pay for my room, pay for my food, play 3-point Molly to $15 table and probably have just as much fun? I mean, that is a legit, I totally respect that and get that and sometimes think that way. But I also think I have so much fun when I can play at a table with Chris and turn $500 into, a $500 in action into $4,000. And, there is it's as we talked about, kind of as you said early on, it's more fun for me. I enjoy playing that way, realizing that, the chances of me losing a lot are much greater than if I were just playing a 3-point Molly.
I don't recommend people chase comps. I don't think I've ever done that.
No, I think in general you guys are very good at saying don't chase comps, but it's often followed with, but the rolls has a really nice ceiling.
It does. My thought is if you're going to play a certain amount, you need to be rewarded for doing so. The casino should be actively enticing you to come, giving you things. And of course, the more that you put in action with a house edge, they're going to be more inclined to do that. Those two things do go, quite hand in hand. But at the end of the day, my thought is, you got to do what makes you happy. So if you're somebody that likes all that comp stuff, great, then do what's going to make that happy. If you're somebody that likes playing the best mathematical way at a craps table, do that. I'd counter that by saying there's plenty of other tables to play at that are going to be much better than that. Or just go play video poker. You can do that.
Which is what Jack does sometimes.
Which is what he does. So obviously that's
video
important
poker is my Heidi and the wind hasn't gotten rid of it yet. So,
but I would say anybody that wants to argue with me over, how the bets are placed on the table, don't you dare put out an all tall small or any sort of prop action or a hard way or anything else like that. Because the moment you do that with me, your argument is completely shot.
I'm glad that I have not done that yet with you guys. So,
I think the craziest thing I've seen Jack ever do at the table is place the 6 and 8. I don't think you ever took the 5 or 9 when you were with us.
No.
So I mean that four close house edge on those. There's no way.
You did buy me a $10 four that one time.
That's right. I remember that. Right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, I mean, you know, the 6 and 8 Jack, it's a 1.67. No, it's a 1.52 house edge, you know. So you're doing yourself a disservice by not playing.
That was actually one of my deepest life regrets. So So one other
thing. And it lives forever in our podcast because we talk about the Jack numbers and, you know.
Yeah.
I think we've gotten through the math part of the stuff I wanted to talk about. And I do think it's kind of interesting, though, some of the differences we have in the ways we enjoy the game that I kind of wanted to talk about here. And obviously, y'all can cut this out if it becomes boring. But I have a list of kind of the testament, according to Crap Vegas, of like why craps is fun. And so let me say some facts, and you let me know if you agree with these or disagree with these.
Have we said these facts in the past?
No. This is just what I've gleaned. So number one,
I was gonna say he's probably got audio recordings. If we don't, right. Josh, so be careful here.
Commandment number one is that having action on more numbers is better because then there's no wasted rolls.
I'm a big believer in wasted rolls.
Chris, yeah. I would say that's more of a Chris statement than a Josh statement. I think of wasted rolls only, you know, as a roll is going on, and you know, if there's three threes that are rolled, you know, that I think, oh my gosh, the seven's going to come soon because we just had all those threes, and you know, it's gonna happen sooner or later. But well, I don't think of it this.
Okay.
Chris thinks of it more as wasted rolls. I don't think that. I would say.
Chris, fair. We don't play the 5 or 9 anymore. So, I mean, exactly. That's been our interest, right? Yeah, come on now.
Wasted rolls, right?
Yeah, come on.
All right. And then, so the second one is that an even spread of bets is better. It would feel bad to have one number be weighted so highly compared to the other numbers you're betting on.
Firmly believe.
Better is
in definition to these rules. These rules are about what's better. And so I just use better on each of them. Right.
Is this Tim's better or
no.
Tim Lawson's getting a free plug on this somehow.
I'm close to agreeing with that. As of course, as a lawyer, you know, our answer to everything is it depends. So I'm close to agreeing with that. I don't know how I feel about better. I like it. It's more fun for me. Because I don't feel that if one number comes, it's going to kill me, or the other way around, if one number hits, it's going to break me. I like to have more of a balance, but I don't know if that's a better way to play. It's what I like better.
I mean, the reason I say it's
what do you like better, I should say. This isn't about what is better. It's about what do you like better is the contrast I'm trying to draw here, certainly.
I don't like a situation where I'm playing a session, no matter how long the session is, how much money I'm putting in play, where literally it's only coming down to a single number being rolled. I don't like that.
Right.
Because there's plenty of sessions that we've all had where just no points get made. They just don't. You hit every number known to man, you know, every box number, but you can't make a point. And then you've had other sessions where you make a million points, but you never actually hit any of the numbers. So from my perspective, I find for longevity purposes, it makes life a lot easier if you have somewhat of a balance between what you're betting rather than having $400 on a 6 and $50 on a 8 and, you know, maybe a 4 or something.
But going to your 3-point Molly, Jack, I mean, to me, that's a good balanced way to play. Like, I would enjoy, from a balance standpoint, a 3-point Molly just as much. I'd feel like once I got all my numbers out there, I wouldn't think I had wasted numbers because there are lots of numbers that couldn't hit. I mean, that would hit that I wouldn't get paid. I would like it. I did like it because I had that balance even with a 3-point Molly.
But what about Josh if they don't hit twice? What about if all the numbers go up and they never get hit again? That's the worst thing in the world.
That's why you should never be a cum-better, right, Chris?
Exactly. Keep going, Jack.
So then number three is bigger payouts are better. You want a high ROI to house edge ratio. That is followed with two question marks in my notes.
I've actually kind of come around against that idea nowadays. I have a tendency to put a lot more action on the 6 and 8 than I do anything else. Even when we're playing nowadays, even when we play just the evens and don't take the 5-9, I'll start at 150 on the 6-8 with only 100 on the 4 and 10, and I'll pump those much faster than I pump the outside numbers nowadays. So I've come to appreciate the 6 and 8 over time much more so than I did when I was a young lad. So I can't fully buy into that.
Now, I would say, when Chris, you talk about pumping the 6-8 more than the outside numbers, I actually try and I treat them fairly equally because the house edge is close between buying the 4 and 10, playing the VIG afterwards, which is a 1.... what, 6'7"?
No, done with that.
We're versus 1.5. Okay, done with. Okay, but anyway, they're close to equal. But I will say that because the 6 and 8 hit more often, I will, you know, I'll start with them a little higher or maybe go a little because the variance is less on a 6 and 8. But sure. I forgot your question. Jack. What was the prompt?
Bigger,
there's nothing
the
better than the
all-small. Bigger payouts are better.
Oh, bigger is better, right? And the ROI, which Michael Traeger said is really the risk of ruin, rather than return on investment, because this is not an investment. Yeah, I'm with Chris. I mean, it's fun to think that, and obviously it's fun to hit the all-small and get paid that huge ROI. But it's a dangerous. It's a dangerous thing to get sucked into too much. I think we try and balance that. And I think as our play has, quote unquote, matured, we have maybe done a little better job of that. But I don't know. I'm still losing as much. So maybe not. Yeah.
Anything else, Jack?
Commandment number 4. Higher rating is better. More rating is more comps.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
Oh, God, yes, it is.
Good. We already discussed this one, but it was on my list, so I had to do it.
Now, I wouldn't be doing justice to Michael Traeger if I didn't say anything you can do to, as you said, goose your rating to actually get it above where you legitimately would be rated is even better. You know, if you can make nice and get your rating better than it would ordinarily be and not have to face the lower house edge of what it takes to get your rating higher, then by all means.
Yeah.
And then the last one is pressing is better, so you can take advantage of a long, hot roll.
I mean, every crafts player knows that, Jack. What are you trying to say?
See, these every single one of these is like things that I tend to disagree with, and the way I play is kind of the opposite of, which
that's
is why
we had you on.
Up. Right. Well, yeah, and so I think, you know, it's to use Michael Traeger as an example. If I told him, hey, I was sitting at the Baccarat table betting on the bank and we had a shoe where it came up banker 10 times in a row. And he'd be like, how much did you win? And I'd say, well, it was a $50 table. So I won 50 times 10, which is $500. That's a lot of money.
What?
He would be, I think, very sad.
And no, I get that.
So this, Jack, let me turn around a little. If you're playing video poker, do you ever vary your bet on a session?
No, I'd play the same game.
Okay, what about blackjack? If you sat at a blackjack table and it was a quarter table and you were playing a quarter, would you ever boost that up?
I don't play very much blackjack. If I'm playing at a quarter table and I hit a blackjack, you know, I'd go up to 35 and then leave the 250 as a tip, you know, kind of thing. Wow. With the 1250 you get kind of yeah. thing.
Right.
Maybe I'd go to 50 on a hand. If I'd won a bunch in a row, I'd spread 1 to 2, as they say, as the card counters say.
Perfect counter.
Again, same with if I'm playing a 3-point Molly, if I've hit a bunch, I might go from double odds to triple odds on a number here or there. But right. It's really not a big part of my game. And as such, when I hear people talk about, like, I can't believe he didn't make more money on that big roll, or like, I'm owed such amount of return, that would have been a $10,000 roll for me.
Right, right.
You know, mm-hmm. part of the way that you play when you tend to press your bets, which you can view as, you know, reinvesting some of your winnings into the numbers that have been
a hitting. Losing venture, yes.
Right. Is that you drastically skew the outcomes in terms of needing these big rolls to make up for the ones that are medium sized.
It's a good point. It's a good point.
Sure. Like a medium roll where someone rolls 3 numbers and the point and then immediately sevens out the next time they come out would be viewed as like a bad roll to someone who like presses their bets, but might not be that bad to someone who collects each time a number is hit or something, right? Especially if you're power pressing.
Correct.
100%.
Well, true. I think Jack, probably that's, I mean, to go back to that story I told about being at Bally's when I was a 3-point Molly player, I wouldn't be surprised if that's part of the reason that I ended up winning over that session and all the place bettors ended up losing, because they were probably pressing, you know, pressing and that kind of thing. I mean, or at least it was a factor in it. You're right. I mean, it's, you know, you have to take the fact that you're pressing out, and let's say you're playing at a quarter and all of a sudden you're playing at 100. You know, if that $100 hand or if that $100 roll loses all of a sudden, that was 3 or 4 $25 rolls or hands.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for sure. And I think, to be fair, last episode, we even specifically said the pressing is a bad idea. I think we said that 100 times.
So the only reason I...
But it is a bad idea.
Do what
we... reason I bring
Do what we say, not what we do, right.
Is in the grand scheme of the argument between, like, pass line and come bets or place bets and buy bets is that you tend to not press as much as a pass and come player. And and I think that's true among the populace that makes those bets, which does then tend to probably lower the house edge a bit further just for the average player, but by no, you know, merit of the bet on its own.
Which I think we've actually even said in our eyes is a disadvantage of being a come better and a pass
line exactly, better. Right,
exactly. Right. Is you've, that you can't
the number of things, things you've said on this show that just blow my mind on a week-to-week basis is extraordinarily high. But, you know, usually I'm just like, oh, they're in their little sandbox and we'll let them play. It's only when it came to, like, you know, you guys actually giving advice to someone operating under a certain framework that I started to take issue.
That's where your umbrage came in.
When Dr. Duffy started talking, you have to listen.
I don't think it was. Yeah.
No, I think, Josh, this whole conversation, just to kind of wrap this thing up so we can move on. I think what all of this really just comes back to is gamblers that are coming at it from a completely different mindset. Jack is clearly an extremely conservative gambler that is much more driven by house edge and games that will give him the best chance long-term not to lose as much money. And when we play, that's not what we're focused on. Yes, we, like Jack said, we are focused on the fun side of things and enjoying the way that we do. But more specifically, I think it's beyond the fun side. Maybe it's because, I don't know if it's because of the level that we play or resources or what it may be. When we go into a gambling session, our goal is either to make a killing or get killed. And there's very few sessions that are far in between. Where Jack comes at it from a completely opposite perspective, where he wants to be down the middle and wants to get the longevity piece of it. I think we've morphed over time to have more of that kind of into the way that we play, but we're never going to be on the same page because we're just coming at this from two completely different places on what we're trying to get out of it.
I agree with Chris, but I will say that if you are going to take lessons from the three of us, the lessons that Jack is trying to teach are probably the better lessons.
Probably. I don't know. Thank you.
let's not go overboard. They're much more responsible. You know,
okay, that's, yeah, they're, yes.
No, but I agree with you, Chris. I think that's a good wrap up. And the only reason that I'm on here to argue in the first place is because I think a lot of what you said didn't come from a, this is our preference, this is the way we like to play, this is... The advice that we're giving here is couched in the fact that when we show up at the table, we're either trying to make a killing or get killed. And thus, this advice that we're giving is kind of a compromise between that strategy we generally employ and what we might advise to someone who's on a more limited bankroll.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I mean, we're always speaking from our own perspective and our own experiences and our own desires when we're at a table. This is not a craps 101. We're going to teach you the basics. Here's the right things to do. Here's the wrong things to do. These are the best bets. That's typically not the perspective from we're speaking from. And from what I can tell from most of our listeners, not all by any means, most of our listeners tend to be more experienced craps players that can, you know, siphon out that this isn't advice for a beginner. But you're 100% right, Jack. We probably should have clarified that more in things that we say, and we probably should in the future and won't, because you'll never be welcome back on the show.
Right. And that's why I felt bad about coming on and trying to, like, accuse
you. No, that's
you
why we invited
of,
you.
Of no, not
we
knowing
wouldn't have
the
invited
math.
You if we didn't want
we
you to.
We absolutely want to, you know, we try, even though, as Chris said, we're not a Play Craps 101, you know, show, you know, although we sometimes bridge into that, but we don't want, when we throw out bad ways that we play, I'm going to say bad as opposed to better or, you know, whatever. When we throw out less advantageous ways that we like to play, we try, and to the extent we didn't, you know, I'm glad you came on, but we try and tell people, you know, this is not, you know, the optimal way to play as far as getting a low house edge, that kind of thing. And we try and be very transparent about our losses, and, you know, and this is a bankroll killer strategy, and, you know, that kind of thing. So to the extent we didn't, you know, again, it means a lot to us that you voiced that and that you wanted to come on and have
I'm
this
just
discussion.
Glad somebody's listening. That's all I care about.
All Jack, right,
we got to wrap up. We got time for maybe one or two quick poker questions.
I got two quick topics for you, Jack. I know you're going to be on The Better Life with Tim and talk more about your whole experience at the WSOP, but you finished what place in your tournament?
13th out of 527.
That is incredible. And this was what kind of tournament?
Fixed limit Texas Hold'em, which is coincidentally, not coincidentally at all, the really the only form of poker that's legal in Minnesota because of the betting limits that are that we have here.
So it fits right up your expertise alley.
Right. That's the reason
that's
I play.
Why I chose that event.
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you play any other? You didn't do anything else? Any other side action when you were there? Or I don't know how at all.
Me and my buddies normally play the fixed limit cash games at the Bellagio. They have they have them kind of all over the board between, you know, 10, 20 and, you know, 100, 200. You can find all sorts of good cash games there. I played 25 hours of poker on this Vegas trip.
That was enough for you?
That was supposed to be fun. And so that was definitely enough for me. But yeah, normally if you bust out of the tournament, we play cash limit poker at the Bellagio.
I had a buddy who played in the, I think it was the $500, you know, no limit WSOP event a couple years ago. And I remember him talking about just how arduous the whole process was.
Right.
Just if you want to hear so long and go ahead.
If you want to hear a little more about how arduous it was, especially given that it was kind of a late start tournament, you know, a lot of those bigger fields like a $500 no limit might start at like 11 a.m. Ours starts at 2 p.m. because it's kind of a more niche tournament. And so if you want to hear more about that, make sure to tune into The Better Life, where Tim interviews me. And he also interviews Vinny Chenz on the same episode, who plays a much larger schedule and is much more kind of seasoned World Series.
Yeah, he's down there for quite a while, right?
Yeah.
Are you going to do it again?
Oh, yeah. We've played this tournament every year for the past 10 years. I mean, it's just this one particular one that we end up playing because of our area of expertise. But yeah.
All right. Last thing, since we got you on before we let you go, what's your favorite property in Vegas?
Oh, I have to say Cosmopolitan, but Resorts World is actually fast catching up just because of how much I like the cocktail bar they have in the Crockford's High Limit area. The cocktails there are outstanding.
They get some great drinks.
The bartenders there are outstanding, and the video poker isn't any worse than you would find at like a Chandelier bar or the Baccarat bar at Bellagio or et cetera.
We're going to have to cut that out, though, because Resorts World doesn't pay us anything. But I appreciate the answer.
Yeah, it was truthful, if nothing else.
Thanks so much, Jack. It meant a lot having you on. You're our first guest on the show in over a year. A year of doing the show, right?
Yeah.
And thanks a lot. No, it means a lot that you spoke up enough to give your opinion, and we appreciate it. Looking forward to playing with you again soon.
Yeah, good talking to you guys, and I hope to see you guys in Vegas.
Okay, so a big thanks to Jack for stopping by and having that conversation with us. That was very enjoyable.
Yeah, as you could tell, it was a little different than our usual thing, the first guest we've ever had on. And so hopefully the episode sounds good when you hear us, and Jack didn't trash us too bad.
First and last, Josh.
Right, now that he's gone, we can talk about him behind his back until he listens, and you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, we hope you enjoyed it. A little different, but we hope you enjoyed it.
So Josh, we got a voicemail from our friends over at Juju Betting, and here's what we got.
Chris, Josh, what's going on? It's Juice from the Gambling with Good Juju podcast. Longtime fan. Love your show. Love this voicemail feature. This is neat. This weekend, had a great road trip with the family. Perfect timing. You guys dropped the episode on Sunday. And during the episode, I obviously made the whole family listen in the car. You joked about who would be listening if they didn't love craps. And well, my wife was listening. She mentioned she doesn't think she'd probably like to play craps with you guys. But I absolutely,
she doesn't would, think she wants to
hope to catch you guys in Vegas.
Well, that's disheartening.
Sometime in the near future. Anyway, quite a bit in the episode about, you know, pass, don't pass. Found it interesting. You guys were talking about using the pass line to hedge the feature bets on the craps table. Here at the local casino, we're not allowed to play the all tall small unless we play the pass line. So just curious if that's normal. Going out to Vegas here in a couple months with some of my high school buddies, having a little birthday celebration. But I think it'd be a fun way to get everybody involved at the craps table to try the all tall small. But of course, you know, they got to pay the pass line. That might be a non-starter. So just curious. Is it common across the board to require the pass line bet to play the all tall small, or is that just kind of a funky rule here at my local casino? Thanks again, guys.
So great message. No.
Yeah, thank you.
That's not common to require a pass line bet to go with the features. They typically don't want people just playing the features.
That's what I was going
to
say.
So if you walk up to the table and just say, I want to put 5-5-5 on the all tall small, and they know you're not going to give any more action, yeah, they would usually discourage that sort of thing because they just want a lot more going on. And typically you'd almost be bypassing the table minimum by doing that if you were, you know, trying to attempt that. But as long as you're going to be making some other bets, you absolutely do not have to be on the pass line most places. There's plenty of times that we've talked about us staying off the pass line for whatever reason. If it's a crapless table, you absolutely should stay off the pass line. And I still always play the feature bets every single time. So I've heard of places that said that before, but it's definitely not common.
And one thing I was going to say, as you said, it's definitely not common. Sometimes if I'm going to step away from the table, let's say I'm going to go to the bathroom or something, I'll throw my feature bets out there. I'll throw my all tall small out there with no other action. And never have I ever gotten any pushback in that sense. So once you're playing, if you're established at a table, you may even be able to play the all tall small with no bets.
Now, just the only thing,
you know, kind of a one-off type situation. What were we going to say?
I was going to say the only thing that I've ever heard that people weren't allowed to do. There's been some times where people, like when they're leaving the table and they have $3 left and they try to tell the dealers, here, put $1 on all tall small. And especially if there's no other players at the table, they won't do that. They can't leave a bet sitting out. And sometimes they don't even want to honor the bet if you're going to be leaving the table since you made it for them. But other than that, no, I don't think that's not a common thing. You should be perfectly fine.
So Juice, thanks so much for your message. First of all, thanks for just leaving us a message in general and for your comments. I was kind of most intrigued when I heard you talk about the fact that, you know, that your wife likes to listen, even though not a Vegas fan or a gambling craps fan or that kind of thing. And that reminded me of, we got a review. Chris, I don't know if you were going to talk about it, but we got an Apple Podcast review that kind of said the same thing. And I thought this was the perfect place to mention it. We always encourage you guys to rate and listen to the show and subscribe and that kind of thing. And so we got a 5-star review and the reviewer said, love it. I don't gamble and I don't really like anything about it, but I really enjoy listening to these two recap their vacations. Just refreshing. So there we go. Our audience is bigger than just Vegas and craps players. And that means a lot. So thank you to the review and thank you, Juice, for saying that too.
I can't argue with that. I didn't know that that person existed, but thank you so much. And thank you again for taking the time to actually leave a review. That was awesome. I appreciated it. Okay, final question for this one, Josh. We got to wrap this up. We got a post on the CV Facebook group, facebook.com/crapvegas, that says, has anyone played at the outdoor craps table at Wynn? I think it's located at the adult pool. In pictures, it looks like a 6-foot tub. Any idea on the table minimums and any bonus bets? I know I've played at it before. I know you and I have walked out to it before, Josh. You want to give him some info?
It's hot.
Way too hot out there. There's fans, but it's not cool.
It is outside. I mean, you're undercover and there are fans, as Chris said, but it's warm. So if it's warm in Vegas, which it usually is, it's going to be warm at the craps table. So if that's not your thing, then don't even bother. But it is a fun table to go out. It is some good scenery around the craps table. It is a smaller, it's not a 6-foot tub, I don't think.
No,
but it's a smaller table. There's three dealers.
Yeah, I think it's still a 10-foot table at least. No, it's a normal size table. It does have all tall small on it if you're looking for a feature bet. And from the couple times I've ventured out there, usually the table minimums are at a quarter.
That's what I was going to say too. I thought I remembered when we went that it was a quarter. I haven't played it. It was just too hot. And I'm like, I'm going back inside. You know, I don't do outside very well. But we saw it. It exists.
And it's next to the European pool. And that's all I'm going to say. So, you know, it might be worth swinging by just to check it out sometime.
If you know, you know, right.
Patreon. That's patreon.com/crapvegas. Thank you to all the new patrons who've signed up over the last couple of weeks. That's Elliot W., Brian C., Benjamin C., Patrick H., Craig Z., and Eric B. I know we posted an episode on there a couple days ago, Josh, about some of our, we'll call it, not safe for work Vegas stories and a discussion of the north end of the
Strip. Not safe for crap Vegas stories.
Yeah, exactly. So if you want to know more about that, check that out. We also mentioned on the last episode there, but that didn't help you guys at all. We now have the ability to give you a free trial on the Patreon page. So if you're interested in just checking it out and see kind of what's going on and all that, just head over there. You can do a 7-day free trial, check it out. We hope you'll stick around, but if you want to just you know, listen to everything and then disappear, I guess that's okay too. I don't know how to track you down and hurt you, so we'll live with it.
And as part of our Patreon plug, you that already are regular listeners or Patreon members already know, but we try and produce CVP content every week, alternating with the main show. So if you want to know what you get on Patreon, the primary thing is that you get extra us. You get bonus us.
You're not selling it, Josh. You're not, that's
not selling it.
Okay. Upcoming trips. Josh and I will both be, when's this come out? Josh, comes out Sunday. We'll both be in Vegas this upcoming week for an extended
trip. Yes, a week from when this one releases. Right. Yeah.
We'll be at Aria. We'll be at Wynn. We're going downtown. We're seeing shows. We have so much packed in to a very, you know, short 4-night trip that it's just going to be amazing.
There might even be some drinking stories. I'm hopeful.
Oh, yeah, we've decided we're going to do that one night. We're going to just get plastered and see what happens. Might be a bad,
how much money we can lose.
But it sounds like a lot of fun. And even better than that, I think Josh asked me one day this past week what day we were going to see Absinthe, because I was in charge of getting tickets.
Oh, that's right. Another Patreon benefit coming up here.
I realized I bought the tickets for the wrong damn week. We weren't even going to be there. So one of our lucky patrons got a free pair of Absinthe tickets for this week's show. So congratulations to that person. I got to scroll down. I'm using two screens.
That's the problem.
Quick reminder for everyone, please subscribe, like, and review our podcast on your favorite podcasting app and visit our merch store. That's crepvegas.com/shop. And a quick special thank you to all those listeners who did leave recent 5-star reviews. Josh pointed out Success Lad's amazing review that they left us a moment ago. But also a big thanks to Walm Flynn's. I know I'm not saying these right, but that's okay. And DS Sigwa. And that's probably not right either, but I tried.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, you guys. It means a lot to us to hear the positive comments, however they come, or negative comments. If you have them, you can certainly send them to Chris. I don't really want to hear them, but
yeah, just send them to me. I'll delete them. No problem.
Yeah, but thank you.
Anything else you want to talk about before we get out of here, Josh?
Well, so Chris, if I had the control of the editing of this podcast, first of all,
this episode, after that,
first of all, we might be in trouble. Who knows? Maybe I'd do a good job. But if I had the ability to take a clip from the last regular CV show and play it for you on this show, it would be, I think it was the last one, it would be the clip where you said something to the effect of, I would never stay at Caesar's Palace. Okay. I would never stay at Caesar's Palace. Well, I have talked Chris into staying at Caesar's Palace. So coming up in August, if all the dice fall where they may, the chips fall correctly, whatever that expression is, we will be staying at Caesar's Palace while I go to the Star Trek convention. So I've convinced Chris that this is a good idea. So,
God, the things that I will do for friendship. Because
you
have really pushed it. You put me in a property I don't want to be at, and it's during the nerd pew-pew convention.
It's not at Caesar's, so you know you don't have to worry about that.
I bet you there's. You can't tell me there's not people walking around in cosplay all over the city that week.
Not that many. They stick to Rio. I mean, okay. You know, I would say you're 90% of your Star Trek Las Vegas guests are staying at Rio, Gold Coast, you know, right there, and they're not leaving that. You know, they might go to a few dinners on the strip and everything, but you're not gonna, I don't think you'll see any cosplay at Caesar's outside of you when I get you, you know, get you dressed up and take you to the,
yeah, no. So is there like real excitement right now with all the, you know, nerdy people coming, cosplay, all that stuff about the alien sightings that they've had in Vegas recently that have been all over? Is that like,
I haven't,
really an awesome thing for you guys?
I, not particularly that I know of, but, okay. You know, I haven't tracked that. I remember a couple of years ago, it was the same time that the grasshopper infestation thing took over Vegas, and that was more exciting than aliens. I'm excited. And so Caesar's Palace is coming up, and I will be paying, at least at this point, I still get a comp room for some reason, but I will be paying resort fees. So haven't had to do that in a while.
I won't. So, haha.
Unless I get him waved on the back end. But the part of the reason I'm doing this is that I don't want the pressure to have to play quite as much, so I can focus on the fun of the Star Trek convention.
Which I'm not part of. So, I mean, you're going to have all that fun without me. I'm just going to be stuck at the tables all by myself. It's going to be really sad.
Poor guy.
I know. That's a shame. Okay. Well, thank you all for listening. We'll talk to you soon, and hopefully this episode comes out in one piece.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Crap Vegas Podcast.
Have you ever been to Vegas?
Check out all our recent news and our Vegas trip calendar by visiting crapvegas.com.
See you in Vegas.